I'd been homeless many times. I squatted. I lived in. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. I had no skill set, no qualifications. I was a walking disaster. But in my head, I was an artist, and I was amongst my fellow creatives living in artistic poverty. I gave it some bullshit, glow to it. So this friend said that to me, and I turned up at my first meeting with 6 weeks worth of figures to prove I wasn't a bloody debtor. And it was a tiny room in the centre of London, and it smelt really bad. One of the guys, it turned out, was living in a condemned flat. I sat in that meeting, and I think there were five, maybe six of us, and it turned out we were the only ones outside America at that point. Someone later claimed that DA in the UK had started about 3 years earlier, but I think it was a bit of a rock and roll. We started, stopped. So I don't know, but the longest person solvent was, I think he was 6 months ahead, or maybe a little bit longer. And I grabbed him, and I grabbed the person who 12-stepped me over the phone, and I kind of bullied them into giving me a PRG 4 days later. And that's completely in a different direction. It was mind-boggling, and I was like, wow. So I came in sort of very negative, very pessimistic, very antagonistic. I was argumentative, very spoiled. I refused to do anything. As I say, there was only about five other people, and I was like, well, I'm not ready to do service, which is a classic line even in a meeting of 300 people. So I'm like, and then I found out much, much later that one of those fellows had actually tried to 12-step me maybe a year before, and I have no memory of it. No memory. I obviously went into such a state of shock. I couldn't remember it, but she's still around. And I really trust that she wasn't bullshitting. She really did remember it correctly. I was the one with short memory syndrome. So I came in, and we only had the book. That was the only piece of literature we had. And some of them, I think three of the members, were trying to transliterate from Al-Anon and Coda into DA language, and it didn't really gel for me. And I think, I'll come back to that later. I think that is still an issue in DA. But anyway, I was just like, bloody hell, this is really useful. You know, couldn't find a sponsor. Again, most of the sponsors were sponsoring really through Al-Anon and Coda. And that was the 10th of June, 1991. And I think it was 95 or 96, by which time we had, I think it was four meetings. And this guy came to the meeting, and as he was leaving, he said, I've come from another country. I've worked the 12 steps of DA, and I need to find sponsors in order to stay solvent. And he's very good looking, which helped. But I just looked around. I thought everyone's going to jump on him, but they didn't. I was the only one. And I said, yeah, could you please sponsor me? You're really lucky to have me, all that bullshit. And he literally said 6 o'clock on Tuesday, and he named this particular cafe and walked off. And I was like, bloody hell, surely I should, he should be checking with my diary, surely. Anyway, he didn't. So I turned up, and we started, and he had a sponsor in DA, so he was at least second generation. I would have been third generation. And he doesn't know where his sponsor got the steps from, but they were really DA. They were really focused, really specific, really clear. One step every 4 weeks, part of the step every week. And then he had a very strict boundary. If I didn't show up and I had to do service, I had to have the 12 and 12 in AA, because that's where we took the literature from. I had to keep the relationship anonymous. I had to do written work every week, and I had to do the running. So none of this texting in the middle of the night, sort of like, oh, where can we meet? It was like, no, I had to work out his schedule. And anyway, we worked the steps, and it was life-changing, absolutely life-changing. And I do that with my sponsees the same, very boundaried. I don't sponsor more than two people at a time. And as a result, because of these boundaries, there's quite a lot of churning, as I call it, where people come for step one or stay maybe the beginning of step four, and then they buzz off. So that's fine. You know, we all sort of have things going on. And I've sponsored quite a few people now through to step 12. And what I find quite sad is how few stay on to pass it on. But I just think somewhere in the ether it'll pan out. that's okay. So we had a huge problem with literature because we began to hear, you know, there was this mythical bits and pieces of literature. And what we found is we'd save up a bit of money to, we had to get a money order, and the money order was nearly always more than the cost of the literature. And then it would get lost or something would happen. And people would turn up and they'd go, oh, I go to DA in America. I'm going back there next week. Shall I pick up some literature? And we give them the money and never hear from them again. And that happened so many times. And we'd have to start from scratch. There'd be huge rows about paying the rent. You know, why should we have to pay the rent? After all, we were debtors. And we were like, no, we're really strictly going to pay our own way. And we did that. You know, and some meetings I come across don't. But any meeting I've been to, I bully. I go, no, we pay our way. We pay the full market rate. And if we can't make it, we don't have the meetings. And I'm really a stickler for traditions. And about, I can't remember, I think it was 95, 96. I can't remember. I used to live in New York. Anyway, I went to New York on a visit. No, it was 90. Sorry, I'm being a bit vague. 98. And I was hitting lots of DA meetings. By this time, I'd already set up BDA in London. I think that was 96, about the autumn time. And one guy came over from America and he said, I need a BDA meeting. Will you set one up and I'll bring the literature? And I was like, great, set up the meeting. He never came, but he did hand me some basic literature. And then it was Boda. And I was just like, this is amazing. This is absolutely incredible. And it was like 76 tools, I think. And we just plowed our way through. And it took a couple of months to get three of us. And then it kept sort of bowling along. And then a couple of people said, oh, this is so good. You know what? We're going to have a BDA and a DA meeting in one. And I said, that doesn't work. And in my experience, it doesn't. It doesn't. But, you know, people got to find out for themselves. So I got to New York, I hit lots of BDA meetings and lots of DA meetings, and I was really shocked to find how many meetings weren't paying their way, how much chaos there was, how much lack of clarity, which I would say is the number one issue. And then somebody said, would I start a workshop on spreadsheets? Because I'd been working spreadsheets since the beginning, and I'd sort of evolved a spreadsheet that worked for me as a debtor specifically, not any old spreadsheet, specifically. And I developed this color coding. So categories where you had to change your life, you know, change your job, change your accommodation, well, there goes the queen in a helicopter or something, were in blue. And then categories that you had to spend money on, but the amount might change. So food, you can spend very little or a lot, or clothes or whatever. And then what I call the pink categories, which were things that you serve no other purpose than to give you joy. And I haven't found a better phrase for that. People kind of reinvent it as something else, but the only thing is to give you joy. So if you're going to, let's say, a Tuscan villa to look after your gran, and you put that as a holiday, that doesn't go in the pink category, that goes in the green. Because again, I was going to visions meetings, which always started off very strong, and a lot of people would go. The population, as it were, was very high, but the recovery was almost non-existent. And I was like, what is it? What is it? And I thought, it's the age-old thing of lack of specificity. Got to be specific. And if you write down every single week zero in your pink categories, eventually you get really annoyed and go, I'm going to find something that serves no other purpose than to give me joy. And it's almost as sure as eggs is eggs. When I'm doing pressure relief groups areas, there might be lots of money, let's say, on designer clothes or something like that, but it's not giving them joy. They're doing it for other reasons, whatever. And if to my mind, having those pink things started to move me towards my vision. So it might be starting a job as a hobby, and you put down the hobby, whatever that is, and then you might like it and enjoy it and turn that into, you know, an income generator. But initially you start it because it feels exciting, or you start saving for, you know, your dream holiday, whatever it is. I mean, some people put down camping. I personally think camping is just the work of the devil. I'd never bloody do that. But some people love it. I don't. going to five-star hotels with infinity pools. Not for me at all. So everybody is unique, and particularly the pink categories become your sort of Savile Row tailored financial suit for you. And those who do work it are really shocked to see how little they spend on themselves, which is one of the things about initially starting the Debtors Anonymous program. Is for me, it felt so restrictive and cruel and mean and horrible, and this was me for the rest of my life. But I was prepared to do that in order to stop debting. So I went to New York in 97, 98, whatever it was, and I saw a lot of chaos in the meetings, and I was really shocked. And then somebody asked me to do a spreadsheet workshop, which I did, and that was fascinating to see how debtors can create spreadsheets, which are really complicated. And that was really nice. And I came back to Britain, to London. And I thought, oh, we're doing quite well, actually. Very interesting. Because many of them are still debting years later. And do you know what debting is now? Debting is, are you writing down your figures now? And it was just really interesting to see how a debting situation, where there isn't one, it will create a state of vagueness using inappropriate vocabulary. One of the things I'll jump to more contemporary. I was part of turning two meetings around, one DA and BDA, where each week of the month we share a step, then a tradition, then we do a tool, and then we do a promises. And if there's a fifth week, we do an experience, strength and hope, and people have to share on topic. And the newcomers will come up and say, when can we share? And I go, well, when you've got something to share. Have you done tradition four? Well, no, okay, read it and have a chat a bit about it. And then next year you can share on it. It always shocks them. So some of them try to read ahead of time so they actually do, they are able to share on things. But the meetings have become, these two meetings have become very boundaried, very strong. Some people don't like that, which is absolutely fine. We also share only that we're debtors, not all the other gubbins that go with it. We have no time shares. And generally speaking, within the hour, everybody who can share on topic does. Because if you think, like we just did tradition four, it's quite hard to share on that for any length of time if you stick to that topic. And they've become very good and quite controversial, and some people have got very cross about it, and that's fine. But I don't want to use the word don't care, but I'm not bothered if people don't like me or what I do. There's enough people around who do feel very positively around it. The other mantra I have, which I didn't follow for, I can't remember, it's about 2 months before that first meeting when I started to go, I've got to do service. So we're giving lots of PRGs, like up to three a week, doing lots of service and getting to the point of burnout. And my sponsor at that time was saying, you've got to cut back. So I only do two sponsees. That's about a 6-hour commitment a week. I do service. I did service at Intergroup for quite a few years in the early stages. And each meeting had a PI person, which we tried to support. But there, again, I could share just on that for ages. We had to get people to do PI locally. And this is for those who are trying to start a meeting wherever they are in the world. They might feel they're the only one, but it only takes two people who actually want to stop debting, who have a desire to stop debting. And that's kind of what started in London. And I did the convention for 10 years. And that was tremendous. And then I handed it over and it did whatever it did. And I started that again post-COVID because I realized at the beginning of last year that we only had, I think it was 6 face-to-face meetings in the UK, which was, well, that was what was registered. So I went, right, convention. So we started a convention and that went incredibly well. And anybody out there who's doing this on their own in the middle, apparently there's a couple of people in China been trying to contact us. I don't know where they are. And I keep asking, where are they? I want to communicate with them. Is start a meeting. Start a meeting. With BDA, I started and I was sitting in a room on my own. I think it was about 3 months. And then a sponsee joined me. And then there was another 2 months and another person joined us. So we had 3 people for a few months. I think within the first year. And that's become more and more powerful. And that is incredibly important to me. I'm about to start a second business, which could earn a lot of money. I've done very financially. I came out of debt 28th of March, 97. And I have to say to those who are aiming to get out of debt, that was one of the worst years of my life. I didn't debt internally. I was a mess. To have that drug completely taken away from me, I hadn't been using debt since I came in 91, but God, I felt the withdrawal of that year, and I stuck with it and stuck with it. And now I sort of hit, so my first million, I went into a meltdown. I was actually in New York when that happened, and I went into a meltdown for about 3 months. I found it so excruciating. And one of the things I had to do was put different money in different accounts, and in the UK, bank accounts are free. So I had different pots, and that way I could kind of keep away from the idea that I had a lot of money, because it freaked me out. And that is something that constantly gives me evidence I'm a debtor at my very, very core. I will be unclear. I will be fuzzy-minded. I will be vague. I will be fantastical. I will ask the direct question. I will go round and round the houses on it. So I'm definitely still a very much a debtor, but I'm a very prosperous debtor. And this takes me back to prosperous. One of my mantras is service makes you rich. And people think I'm joking, and they go, ha, ha, ha. And I go, it does. It really does. Working with other debtors in whatever short form it is, be a greeter, do tea and coffee, help set out the chairs, whatever it is, turning up at a meeting consistently and hearing other people and involving yourself with other people. I don't think a day goes by without me spending at least a couple of hours talking to a debtor, whether it's in a meeting or on the phone, and I share and I ask for help. And I help others who ask for help. And that is the bottom line. And that is the end of my time. Stay with it. It's bloody brilliant. Thanks.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sabrina. Venetia, now is as good a time as any if you would like to kick off your share.
Thank you so much. And I must say, before I start editing, it's such a pleasure to be asked to do this. You know, this is such a wonderful... And DA has changed my life. DA has literally changed my life, given me back a life. You know, I didn't look like I hadn't got a life before, but it was all a sham. It was all a sham. And whereas mine was slightly different. I mean, I'm going to talk about the meetings outside of London and where I was, which was in Brighton on the South Coast. And that was kind of my home group. And then I would come up to London. I would drive for miles to go to a meeting in a seaside town down the coast from me in Bournemouth. I would just drive to meetings because I'm jumping in the middle, actually. But my sponsor would say, as it said in, I did DA Howe, and it said in DA Howe, you have to do 3 meetings a week. And at that time, near me, there was one. And I came in all shiny-faced and all to the world. Everything was good. I had a great job, a job I really loved. It was very creative. But it was all a sham. I had no money. I had no money because I was spending it. If I got paid on a Monday, I'd have run out on a Wednesday. You know, that was my... And it was nobody's fault. It wasn't my fault. It was everyone else's fault. There was a lot of blaming going on until, I think, when my mother died, who, bless her, was my chief enabler, that brought me to my knees and I had to come in. That was 2014. And I was in another fellowship and I'd heard, thankfully, a guy got up and said... All the fellowships he was in, thank God. And one of them was Debtors Anonymous. And I thought, that's where I'm going. I have to go there to save my life, because this is... All my family at this point were hating me because I'd run through my mother's money. And if she'd lived, she probably wouldn't have had much left. I was like a forest fire. You didn't want to get near me. I always say, well, I think it's a joke now. It wasn't a joke to people at the time. If I say to people in my meetings, actually, if I knew you then and I'd written you a check, it would definitely have bounced. I bounced checks everywhere. Thank God we don't have checks anymore. So I was a forest fire burning away. I really wasn't good to be near anyone. And then everything got quiet. My mother died, my chief enabler, and my life got very small, which was a very good thing to do. And I always say to people when they come into DA, actually, it's quite good to come in with not a lot of money, because then you really feel the rock bottom, you feel that I want to change my life. And that's what it was when I came in. And I had been to a couple of meetings in London and they were really good. And I was moving because my mother had died and left me some money, and I had a great guilt that I shouldn't have this money. And I and London was thriving. This was 2014, was thriving with DA meetings. And I saw that Brighton had a DA meeting, which had started about 6 months before. And I thought, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going. And that's where I went. And the joke was, the night I arrived, I had very little money, and my ex had lent me his card to get there. I think there was £10 on it. And I don't live very far from Brighton. And when I got there, what I'd forgotten to ask, or he'd forgotten to tell me, was that it could only work in certain banks. So I couldn't use it. So I rang up the number of my home group and said, is there anyone who can get me a lift from the station, or I can walk? I didn't know Brighton very well at that time. And they said, oh, no, this sweet person, an angel, said, jump in a cab. I thought, in a cab? I'm trying to get away from cabs. So jump in a cab and we'll pay you. I'll pay you it when you come up. And this wonderful, and I thought, I was sitting in the cab, I'm in debt again. I'm in debt now to this lovely angel. And she was just marvelous. My first meeting, it was full of light. Everyone was so welcoming. It was wonderful. And I did think, oh my God, I've got a long mountain to climb. But I thought, I know I'm in the right place. And most people hadn't been in very long. And I wanted to get a sponsor, a PRG, all on the same day. And a woman who started the meeting, two of them wonderful people, said, no, take the time, start doing PRGs, start doing your daily records. Don't rush in like in other fellowships, like AA and NA. It's more of a must that you have to. But in DA, you need to get the tools done. And that made a lot of sense. And sometimes I even see now, because I have a lot of sponsees, that sometimes I think people start them a bit too quickly. But the history for me then, that at that time, the history of DA in 2014 was that it was going well in London. And this new meeting, we were full, and I sort of, once I was in, I was in. And I started the steps about 7 months later, and I found a wonderful sponsor. I did it the DA Howe way, which for me was incredible. It's DA Howe literally changed my life. I mean, I always say the denial, dishonesty, the defiance, and the delusion all came out of me when I did steps 1, 2, and 3 in DA Howe. Suddenly, I couldn't make excuses anymore. I couldn't lie. I had to be supremely honest. And there was quite a lot of people doing steps there, which was wonderful, because that kind of keeps the fellowship really fresh and new and people working it. And for me, it was just the biggest revelation. And we had... I did the steps. I did them in about, it took me quite a long time because I was ill in between all this as well. So it was about two and a half years. And then I kept on going. And then COVID came. And then it was like, oh my God, no face-to-face meetings, nothing in person. And then it was like a miracle. Zoom appeared. Now, I had a little knowledge of Zoom. Weirdly, I've been asked to do a PRG. I did lots of PRGs. I am very compulsive. Compulsivity runs from it's much more trained now. It's much more, I've curbed it, but I was doing an awful lot even then before. So I went on a PRG and we did it on Zoom. And this was before I'd even heard of Zoom. And then I went on a meeting down in Cornwall by somebody saying, would you like to chair? And I said, well, I'm up here and you're in Cornwall, which is miles away for anyone who doesn't live in this country, miles and miles. And I said, why don't I just do it on the phone? And that's what I did. So the sort of seeds of Zoom, which was amazing, especially for everyone, brought us all together. And then suddenly I was talking to people in New York. I was going on meetings to... to California. I do a lot of meetings in California, Southern California, and the world changed. And then in-person meetings came back even more. I spent a week with a sponsee from another country in October doing a lot of in-person meetings, some of which I didn't realise had come back. And that was wonderful. And my sponsor, as I said before, said when I first started the steps, you've got to do 3 meetings a week. And I thought, ugh. I didn't have much money then, money wasn't trickling in. I basically had a very successful career, loved my job, but I was exhausted. My mother had died, trauma-wise, all of it, and I kind of knew that I wanted to kind of not I knew that it would affect my recovery. So I knew I had to change, and so I was starting to do different things within my kind of remit. But the most important thing in my life at that time was my recovery. And I owed something like 50,000 in parking tickets at one time. So now, in that first period when I came in, and 25,000 in the congestion charge, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, is a rather nasty tax that you're driving into a city, you have to pay, and nearly every city in London, in England has it. But I knew that every job I did, I had to make sure that I had my parking paid. I had to make sure that I wasn't getting a parking ticket, that I, you know, everything was, I was doing the correct way. I mean, it absolutely changed. I didn't do anything with money apart from heinously spend it. And that's all money meant to me. I knew nothing about responsibility. I wasn't a grown-up at all, really. I think I felt I looked like one, but I wasn't really. And this was my mid-50s. So, it just changed me. Even writing down my figures every day, committing to doing a spending plan. I still do mine by hand, actually, because I just needed to do it. That was my most important thing. And back in London, in those days, they had this wonderful designated PRG meeting where you would go up just for a PRG. And I imagine they still have them in the States. But that was the first time I did a PRG. And I was terrified, and I'd wasted a lot of time redoing it three times because of my high state of perfectionism, to find out somebody very nicely said to me, "You've left all your pence off," which I can easily do now as well, but which was quite funny. But I learned a lot from those PRG meetings, and it gave me the confidence to do them. So I kind of went back to Brighton, where we hadn't got and they started big time. And then we had a kind of mini convention in Brighton. And we've always been, even despite COVID, it's always been a very healthy fellowship down there. Now they've got an in-person, again, two in-person meetings, and which is great, because, and they're in the same place almost as I did mine originally. And so I'm going back in about a week's time to do one. But I can't say what this, I mean, I on the surface thought I had a good life. I was a good workaholic, working crazily. Everything was mad. Everything was bananas. But I have peace in my life now. I have a peace. I have a serenity. You know, I still work my program. But what I've learned in kind of longer recovery is that that's a thing in itself. Keep on going. Never leave. Never leave it, because you'll come back with 20,000 more in debt. And even though I might not be doing it perfectly, I'm doing it. I'm a person of excess. I do a lot of meetings. I have a lot of sponsees. I have a lot of everything. And everyone says to me, "Oh, Venetia, how can you do it all?" And I have sponsors who correct me and pull me in, and a wonderful therapist. So I'm well supported. But this, I mean, a lot of other fellowships too, of course, but this one is close to my heart. This one is absolutely, I love it. And it's wonderful. It's wonderful to be here and speaking to people I assume going to hear me on the other side of the world, which is so thrilling. And I love the early days stories that Sabrina was saying about what it was like in those very early days. And even checking up today on the history, which I love, about John H., when they started in New York and all the meetings there. I love that. Look at us now. We're still going. So I can only thank this fellowship to the bottom of my heart, because it's really given me a heart again. It's given me a soul, and it's given me a life. And that's amazing.